Luann, your chairperson, welcome to the Arizona Area Turbocharge Your Recovery Workshop. You know, this workshop is hosted by the Arizona area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to help members take their recovery to the next level, or at least up a notch. We'll open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I've asked Becky to read the preamble. So Patrick, if you could put the preamble up for Becky.
Preamble. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic.
Thank you. I have asked Mike to read our workshop opening.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike. One of the simple practices I've used over the years to sustain my willingness to attend meetings is to make a commitment to perform one job related to the group, whether serving coffee, putting out literature, acting as treasurer, or filling the position of secretary. Clearly agreeing to speak at a meeting is also an excellent incentive for attendance. In this way, I remove all debates about whether I have the time, the energy, or the willingness to attend by simply recognizing that I have a job to do. While performing my chosen task, I'm assured that I am part of a gathering where, however imperceptibly, parts are being healed. Many members find that Al-Anon service provides welcome healing benefits. Service offers many of us a new experience in group participation. No longer isolated, we have a common welfare with other Al-Anon members and also with people still seeking help. A common bond unites us despite our many differences. As we reach out carrying Al-Anon message of hope, we look for confirmation that our actions in fact support our common welfare. For guidance and support, we turn to the traditions and strive to practice our program's concept of obedience to the unenforceable. The traditions offer guidance for our efforts, but we have individual responsibility for applying them. As we apply the traditions to our actions, we notice that these precepts for preserving unity can be applied to other experiences and other relationships. Our families, friends, business, and communities all provide fertile ground for practicing the principles of our traditions. And as we do, we find ourselves growing by leaps and bounds. In reaching out to others through Al-Anon service, we have the opportunity to share our unique experience and our personal recovery for a common good. We have the chance to encourage detachment, acceptance, and serenity in a supportive environment and to get to know ourselves better, both strengths and weaknesses in the process. We have the opportunity to contribute not only to what we can do, but more important, who we can be. By sharing our recovery, we strengthen its workings in our own lives. By seeking to allow a higher power to work in and through us, we come to feel more fully the presence of that power in giving we receive. And this reading is from When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 7 and 8, 38 and 55 to 56. Copyright Al-Anon Family Groups, 1994.
Thank you so much, Mike. And I have asked Deborah M. to read our January reading.
Service was the last thing on my mind when I first attended Al-Anon. I felt so desperate and hopeless, I could barely see beyond my own pain. But as I kept coming back, I began to notice people preparing coffee, setting out literature, arranging furniture. This activity all seemed natural and spontaneous, no prompting, no directing. People did what they did because they wanted to. And after the meeting, I saw them again, rearranging furniture, putting away literature, helping out. Most important, I saw people greeting me, extending a hand, smiling, and sharing a hug. At each meeting, I saw the same people doing the same things, but I also saw newcomers pitching in. I noticed, too, that members took turns chairing the meetings and that everyone shared the reading of the steps and traditions. These small gestures suggested to me that part of caring in fellowship. I slowly started pitching in myself. Today, I see how my small gestures gave me a sense of belonging and encouraged me to reach out to others. My actions led me to focus on something besides my own self-pity and resentment and helped me to embark on the road to recovery. When I began to feel good about myself, I could value my talents. The confidence others showed me was contagious. I came to believe that what I got from the program depended very much on what I gave. And gradually, I took on more responsibilities. I'm now a group representative, and this service has given me a special sense of caring for all the members of my group, learning to take care of my responsibilities as a GR without taking on those of others has helped me in other situations and relationships. I've come to sense the miracle of a fellowship under one authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. I ask myself, what part can I play in this fellowship? From when I got busy, I got better, pages 10 to 11.
Thank you very much to our readers. Each of our three panelists will share for 15 minutes, and the rest of the time will be used for your questions and possibly some brief shares. So remember, any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. Now I would like to introduce our first speaker, who is Ricky.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ricky, a grateful member of Al-Anon. And every time I say that, I think of when I first came in and people said they were grateful. Blah, but that's another whole topic. We won't go into the fact that I was not grateful for being here. My service story is long and started at the group level, just like that reading of, helping set up the room and being a treasurer and doing this and that. But before I get into my service story, I need to tell you a little bit about myself first, because that's why my service was so important to me, was my own history. I got into the program after sitting for about 15 months in one chair in my kitchen. I believe it was called clinical depression. And I did end up in the funny farm with a nervous breakdown, but my world was so small. And through my service work, first, like I said, I did things at the group level. Then I became a GR. Then I became a DR. I also did lots of things at the area level. I was group records, a bunch of other things. I was in Connecticut at the time, so I was very close to New York, where the World Service Office was at the time. So I even did some volunteering down in the World Service Office. So through the program, my world expanded. That was the first thing that I really noticed, was that from the one chair to the group, to the this, to the that, to the World Service Office, I kind of got roped into my first real, quote, service position. And Helene, don't take this personally because it's not you, but somebody said to me, Ricky, Helene needs a ride to the workshop. Can you drive her? Now, I thought that was a very clever way of getting me to do a little service. You know, we don't want to say that I was manipulated in any way, shape, or form, but the old timers in the meeting, and also we used to elect chair people for 3 months at a time, and it would be a secret ballot. And after I was in the program a few months, all of a sudden I got most of the votes to be a chairperson. And I didn't know how that happened until a couple of years later I heard, Mary's ready to be chair. Mary's ready to be chair. So the old timers had this way of getting us newcomers involved, which I really liked. But more to the topic of today, back to my own personal story, my parents were divorced when I was 4. Oh, by the way, Ricky is my real name. I was named after a gin Ricky. Now, the only thing I don't know, was my mother drinking it when she got pregnant, or was my mother drinking it when she told my father, because they weren't married, so she had to break the news to him. So, okay, so alcohol's been in my life, obviously, since birth, or pre-birth, prenatal. But my parents divorced, they did get married, and they divorced when I was 4. I was in a boarding nursery school at age 4. Then I had a parent on one on each coast, one in Hollywood, where I was, and one in New York, where my mother was. My father was on the West Coast. So I spent a few years there. Then somehow or other, my father ended up back in New York. So he shipped me back to New York. I lived with my uncle for a while. I lived with a family that I don't even know how my father found them. I was boarded out for about 5 years. So I didn't even live with a parent again till I was in high school. So all this shifting around, it was very clear that I didn't know where I belonged. I didn't have any kind of roots. So anyway, I got into the program, and that's where, by this constantly keeping my butt in the chairs, which is a term I use a lot, I started to realize that I'm getting comfortable here. I'm making friends here that I'm keeping. I never used to keep friends because, to me, if I met somebody and I liked them, say at work, and then one of us changed jobs, I didn't want to miss them, so I just erased them. So the concept of keeping friends, and that's one thing that's been so amazing to me. I've been in the program 39 years now, and I have friends that I've had for 39 years, which is like amazing to me because I never kept friends. So this sense of belonging to a group became very important to me, but I didn't realize it was happening. It just happened because I kept coming. People kept talking to me. People accepted me just the way I am. And I remember my mother deciding that it must be a cult because people accept me, warts and all. So therefore, it must be a cult that this Al-Anon program is. But it isn't. It's so much more. It's such a way of life. It's such a philosophy of life. The 12 steps are absolutely amazing. I try to live my life with that. But this having faith that, I'll even use another word, having trust in the people around me. Trust was another thing I didn't have because, you know, well, who was I going to trust as a kid? I'm deaf in one ear because the nursery school, you know, didn't notice that I smelled funny. My parents didn't notice I smelled funny. Finally, I smelled bad enough. They sent me to a doctor and my eardrum had ruptured. I had head lice. Because the school thought my parents were washing my hair. My parents thought the school was washing my hair. So I didn't know to trust things, to trust people. So there's so much about this program by keeping my butt in the chair and by, as the last line in the Just for Today is, as I give to the world, so the world will give to me, has sort of become my philosophy in life. Because of this sense of belonging, for the last few years, I traveled in an RV, and I felt comfortable enough to walk into any meeting. I didn't care where it was, where I was, and I'll be honest, if the meeting had an A at the end, I didn't care if it was AA, OA, DA, I didn't care. If I needed a meeting, I went, because I knew that I would be accepted in the meeting. I identified myself as Al-Anon and asked permission if it was a, you know, a meeting that I didn't know, but that being a part of this worldwide organization, one thing that I noticed, I said that I did some volunteer work at the World Service Office. So this was quite a few years ago, but there was something like 27 people were the only paid employees of the World Service Office at the time. And the whole worldwide fellowship, the rest of it was run by volunteers. And that was something that just so absolutely amazed me. The whole structure of how this program works is, yes, the steps are important. Yes, the traditions keep our groups together. But I remember reading the first time I read the tradition, I mean, the concepts, it was in a pamphlet called Al-Anon's Best Kept Secret. They don't even use that expression anymore, I don't think, because the secret's out. But the concepts of service were so phenomenal. I had a small business that I owned, and I wished I could run my business the way. Participation is the key to harmony, you know, the rights of the minority to be heard. So many wonderful things in this program. But the biggest thing is I learned how to belong. And I think that's something that all humanity wants. We want to belong to our family. We want to belong to our community, to our tribe, to our nation. Belonging is so important to our own personal well-being. We are, humans are social animals. We're not meant to be alone. I mean, some people do, and that's not me. But I mean, I thoroughly enjoy my alone time. But I now have three communities because I learned how to be in community in Al-Anon. I live in an RV park now, so I have my RV park community. But I came to Green Valley because I already had my Al-Anon community. And then I have my faith community. So, even though I'm not speaking so much specifically about service per se, I just got so much by being in service. Like I said before, learning to trust, keeping friends, expansion of my world, being comfortable with myself outside of my skin. I used to hibernate, if anything, or I would have been very comfortable as a recluse for quite a while. And that's not really who I am. The service works that I did, each one of them taught me something about myself. I had worked my way through various positions on the convention. We had a convention of about 1,000 people in Connecticut at the time. And I worked up to chairperson. And when I got to be chairperson, I realized I didn't have to do everything. I always thought that I was the only one that could get anything done because growing up, I was the only one that could get anything done. I lived with my father who was so drunk by dinner time that I had to cook dinner, even as a little kid. Excuse me. So learning that I didn't have to do everything. I didn't have to be right about everything. All these wonderful parts of who I am now are parts that were always there, but had been so masked by what I had to do to survive the way I grew up that, I was so glad when I finally got to Arizona where I was going to stay still for a while that even though, you know, meetings here were pretty pretty stable, I've decided, I'm in Green Valley. I go to Tucson a lot. I'll go pick up the literature. You know, just any little thing that I could do that would then have me coming back to the meeting. And I love that part, that by taking on just a small commitment, be it bringing the literature or we don't set up coffee and refreshments like we used to, but just being the person who's going to take the box of literature out of the cupboard and set it up gets me to belong with the group. And I say with rather than to, I don't belong to the group, but I belong with the group. And I think that's all I'm going to say, even though I'm short for 15 minutes. So that's a miracle for me, too. That's something I learned in the program, is how to get to the point, say it, and be done. So thank you very much for all being here.
Our next speaker is Bonnie. So Bonnie, if you could just go ahead and unmute and share.
Okay, well, here I am in Sarasota, Florida. It's chilly for us. And to say hello to everybody, I decided to write my talk because there's so much that I decided to keep it focused as much as possible. So here we go. And pardon me for reading, but I'm going to do it. A sense of belonging is something that's really important to me. In 1969, I was 26 when I came to Al-Anon. A short time before that, I was a go-go girl in a cage traveling with a rock and roll band for 5 years on the road. Talk about drugs, drinking, and rock and roll. As a matter of fact, I have a picture right here. I'll show it to you really briefly. That's me back in 1969, okay? Looked pretty damn good, didn't I? Anyway, that's not true anymore. My then musician husband had a horrible drinking and drug problem. They all did, really. And when the band finally broke up in the early 60s, we were left living with my mother and father in a little house in North Plainfield, New Jersey. Here we were back in their house, and I was filled with shame and failure. My dad, who was one of my qualifiers later on, could not stop for a minute saying that I married a bum with no job. I absolutely believed that I had caused it, could control it, and I had cured it. I had broken his heart, you see, so I caused it, didn't I? And then looked for bottles and did all that crazy stuff that we all do, and I was controlling it. And then I thought I cured it, because the night before he went to AA, I was telling him that our marriage is on the rocks. I almost told him about the cheating I was doing. I'm not going to go into that whole thing. But the next morning, he called AA. My God, I did it, didn't I? I was left with resentment and anger about the two strangers who picked him up that morning. There was no treatment programs back then. And they could do for him what I could not. They also asked me to come with them. And it was an anniversary in Westfield, New Jersey. 200 people. Afterwards, I said, you're not an alcoholic. You just drink too much. I mean, I really believe that. I knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism. Much later, when he was sharing his story, I found out it had nothing to do with me. And I truly hope he is sober to this day. And that was over 45 years ago. We divorced. I am really grateful to him because he suggested Al-Anon. He tried so many times, but I struggled because I thought it was different. The women in that room were old. They're probably a lot younger than I am today, I'm just going to say. Okay. And I was so afraid and ashamed of my thinking, ashamed of the things I had done. And I'm not going to go into that whole thing too, because it's a lot. During that time, I had attended an Al-Anon anniversary 8 miles from where we lived. And I brought those old ladies with me too, by the way. And I heard a lady, Jo S., an Al-Anon member, she's long gone. She was a member for 14 years, who was the speaker that night. She was so different than I, well-dressed, educated, very articulate. And when she was through with her story, it's hard to explain, but I walked out of that room filled with hope. So filled with hope that in spite of myself, I started attending the very meeting that I rejected. And with those four old ladies, I even became committed every Thursday night and found myself arriving early to set up the chairs and even clean those empty ashtrays. If you remember that whole thing. All we had was the One Day at a Time book, the first book, The Daily Reader, and some pamphlets that we still have today. I even had a sponsor, the wife of one of the men who had picked us up that first morning. I didn't even know what to do with her. Every Thursday, we read from the book and discussed the pages of the day. Many times it was on the 12 steps, and I remember thinking, I can't work these steps. Well, maybe the first step. I definitely knew that my life was unmanageable and perilous. For the members that are sitting here right now and thinking you cannot work the steps, and I do know some of the people here, certainly the fourth and the fifth step, I do know how you feel. I sat through many meetings. Okay, I could do the first three steps. I sat through many meetings. And the second step, coming to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, was huge for me. The third step, I kept working on it over and over again. It took me 8 years to do a complete fearless moral inventory of myself. I will not go through all the steps, maybe another time when you want to hear me speak on them. I'd be glad to do so. It's amazing how I had no idea the sense of belonging I wanted, and it was happening to me. I grew up a kid that really tried to be somebody else, and I was never popular. People were so surprised today to hear me say something like that. Belonging means taking a risk, with people that I could trust. And all of a sudden it happened. I was part of a group. And I loved being part of the group. I became GR and a lot of other things too. But during that time in 1971, I was asked by two members who had teenagers, and they wanted me to think about sponsoring an Alateen group. I was flattered that they thought of me, but wondered why, because I was still dancing three nights a week at a local nightclub, along with my day job in a shipping department. My life was a mess. Why they asked me, I probably wouldn't qualify today, believe me when I say that to you. I was doing a lot of wrong things, and looking back, and I can thank those two mothers for encouraging me to do so. I said, yes, I'll try. It was held at a 24-hour AA clubhouse, and the group grew to over 30 some kids, probably more than that, I can't even remember. And they called themselves the Middlesex Rowdies, which shows you the kind of group I had. My now husband, who was sponsored back then too, he had the intellectual group. I had the rowdies. We always sponsored different groups. We also had a member of AA who sponsored. And back those days, he was an AA member, not an Al-Anon member. He was young and he didn't have quite a year sober. We didn't have a lot of rules back then. But I'll tell you something, those kids loved him. And to this day, I'm still friends with him today. He's actually living in Sarasota, Florida now. And he's still sober today. And it's wonderful to talk to him. So because we had to have other sponsors, so that even happened too, because we had so many kids, so we actually split them by ages. I loved sponsoring those Alateens, and I realized hearing them share about their homes with alcoholism, about their fathers and mothers and siblings and struggles, they had the courage and bravery of these teens working their program. I was a sponsor, but I was learning a heck of a lot about my childhood. I think the thing is that I realized I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I was totally surprised by that because, again, I just thought the alcoholics were Bowery bums. And of course, I've learned so much about that. I really understand it now as much as I can, not being an alcoholic myself. I was supposed to be the adult, and I realized that I had a lot of work to do. My Al-Anon program, I was really struggling even then. But I'm grateful I did, because I started going to Alateen conferences and the weekend events, and got very, very active with Al-Anon. As a matter of fact, George, my husband now, he sponsored the first Al-Anon convention in New Jersey in JALCON. And then I got the courage to be the chairman of JALCON in 1977. I loved it. You see, belonging means commitment also, doing my part. And for every step that I took in being brave enough to do a first thing in Al-Anon, I became much more confident. I'm still nervous even talking about it right now. That's how crazy my life is. But the good news, that all did happen, and I'm grateful. With all these wonderful meetings of Al-Anon and Alateen sponsoring, struggling with my life, I received a call from a wonderful lady named Carol, the World Service Conference Alateen chairman. And she asked me to be on the Alateen committee. I asked her, what was it? And she said, come to the first meeting and you will decide what you want to do, what it is, the committee. Now, at the time, I had a $75 old station wagon, and I actually drove that car through the Holland Tunnel with a lunch bag on Saturday in the old World Service office in New York City. Now, I'll tell you something. I had such fear of Holland Tunnels and all the other things and that car breaking down, but I made it. And back then, like I said, we had lunch bags, okay? It's not as one, it's great today. And my life changed forever because in 1977, serving on the Alateen committee, I became the Alateen chairman and Carol became the World Service Office special worker. She was Alateen administrator. At the World Service Conference, which then was at the Biltmore Hotel with the mirrors completely around, there was hand raising, that's all that was going on. Scared to death of raising my hand for anything. I was sitting with Carol and met for the first time Lois, who was still on the Alateen board. Who was still on the Al-Anon board. I found out that Lois had a special place in her heart for Alateen. And through her and encouraged by her, I was elected to being an Al-Anon on the Al-Anon World Service Board. She wanted Alateen to be represented. And I'm gonna read to you, this is Lois Remembers, I still have the copy. And she wrote in my book in 1979, I'm grateful, in gratitude for your devotion to Alateen and with love, Lois. I treasure it so much. Not only that, I got to be with Lois at the Al-Anon picnic. Here it is, I'll show you that one. That's one of them. I have so many memories. I've got pictures all over the place. I'm not going to bore the heck out of you, but I just wanted to show you the things that can happen when you serve Al-Anon. It opens up doors and beautiful people in your lives, and I'm so glad that happened. And my life changed forever. And I can truly say that the things that have happened have just been amazing. The board member were treating me so good, and my life did change. Those wonderful board members, they nurtured and supported and helped me. Those first people, I've got pictures of them. I look at them. There, a lot of them are gone today, but I can't say enough about the memories I have with them because it lives within my heart and my mind. I can't say enough about, I certainly didn't believe that I was worthy of the position and used to ask myself, why me? Well, certainly it can happen to you. Why not? If we just take that step of being willing to serve in some way, it doesn't have to be a lot. It could be speaking at a meeting, trying to be GR, alternate GR, whatever it is, that's what's important. While all of this was going on, my personal life was changing big time. So much so that in 1980, I made a personal decision to move to London with George because of his job, who became and is still my husband of over 40 years. My gosh, that's amazing. Because when I first met him, I told him, well, maybe I'm the kind of person that can't be faithful to one person. Can you imagine telling him that and him taking a risk? Well, you're my witness. And I have to say, I have been faithful to him always. And it's not because he would know or you would know. It's because I know. That's the important thing of being true to myself and knowing I'm worthy of a good relationship, and I can do that too. I do want to say that we are Al-Anon members, and both of us, George and I, were active sponsoring Al-Anon groups ourselves. I also volunteered when I moved to London to the GSO there and became Al-Anon chairman there and on the board of Al-Anon there. We were there for 4 years, and then George was transferred to Paris, France. And again, we both served being active with the English-speaking Al-Anon groups, and I also sponsored an Al-Anon group there in Paris at the church, the American Church of Paris. In 1988, when I came back to the United States, New Jersey, 2 weeks after I got back, I found myself taking the train 6:30 in the morning and became one of the special workers at WSO in New York. I was hired as the Al-Anon administrator. I was there till 1996 when WSO moved to Virginia Beach and I retired to Florida. I know how to say hello to something and how to say goodbye. It's very, very important to do that. Even in service work, I don't have to do it all. I still have a sponsor to this day. I want to be accountable. A sense of belonging, I know I belong in Al-Anon. Not once did I ever think of leaving Al-Anon. All those years I've been in, many, many things have happened in my life, including making amends to the people that I love dearly, didn't like for a long time. I had the hell freezes over list. I don't know if you know about that one. It's gone. I still sponsor now adult children. I've given up that role when I left Cape Coral, Florida. I'm now in Sarasota about 10 years, and I love it. I'm 78 years old and I have no regrets. I know I belong. I will always believe in the mission of helping the family and friends of alcoholics. I have traveled the world and now in Zoom, grateful where I live, the sense of belonging with them and the people I love. I love all my meetings, the Zoom meetings, the study groups, the stepsisters we're now doing. We're out of the reaching for personal freedom. I did all of that. And now we're on the transforming our lives grief. What else can I say? I mean, there's a hell of a lot more. I'm not going to cover all this stuff that it's gone. I just wanted to share with you that service work has been the lifeline to every single thing I have today. Some people don't want to do service work. I get it. It's a lot harder than it was in those years. I get that too. But just say yes to it. If you can possibly do it, it's really an important factor in belonging. I have everything I need here today because of that. Thank you. I'm so grateful. And by the way, if you want to come to Florida, get out of that wither. George is laughing and backing me right now. We have a spare room. We have a Florida daughter that we adopted right now. She's going to be taking its place at Tuesday when we pick her up at the Tampa airport. That's all I have to share. I think that's enough. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I really appreciate sharing my story. Bye.
Thank you so much. So our third speaker is Christy from Texas.
Hi, Arizona family. Thank you, Ricky, and thank you, Bonnie, for your willingness to share. I really enjoyed both of you. It's a privilege and an honor to be asked to do this anywhere. January is my recovery month, so it's always very important for me to step out during the month of January. The 7th is my recovery date, and I live in Texas. I live in Mesquite, Texas, which is east of Dallas. So I'm more in central Texas, which is nothing like Florida and definitely nothing like Arizona. Very flat. I came into recovery because I love someone so much that I was willing to look for some place for me to help him. I had a very strange encounter of the Al-Anon program. I was at work. My husband of a very long 20-something years had never drank alcoholically until then. And I was willing to share with anybody that was willing to listen to me. And that's what I did. I mean, I didn't care where you were, grocery store, post office, bank, family. It didn't matter. I was talking to you about what was going on with him and why I didn't understand what was happening. And I was at work and I was in my position. I was helping my employer manage some apartment buildings that he had. And I used to have to find vendors. And I used a phone book. I often tell young people, I'm sure you don't know what that is. And this was even more specific. It was a Yellow Pages. So it was an actual book that was yellow. It was in alphabetical order. I was looking for a plumber. Could have been AA plumbing for all I know, but it didn't take me very long before I started sharing about what was going on in my life. And I told him, and he said, "Have you ever heard of Al-Anon?" I had not. I was not young. I thought alcoholics lived under the bridge with a paper sack. When we were kids, we would go close to Fair Park, and my dad would say, "You kids, roll your windows up, they're out there." And I thought that's who they were, them. Never occurred to me that it could have been somebody that was educated and responsible and loving and kind and generous and cared so much about his family and his friends. He would do anything for you. He was talented, honest. All the things that I had grown to love at a very early age. And here it was all these years later, and I did not understand why. I did finally admit that there was a problem. What I ended up doing was not really interested in me. But here's what I think, and this is a personal opinion. I think our biggest problem is we don't have a problem. And because we don't have a problem, we can't ever work on our own problem. It's their problem. And if they would take care of their problem, I wouldn't have a problem. And so it took me a long time to even admit that I was even any part of what was going on in my home. And it was not pretty. It really wasn't. And I did end up being more interested in intervention. And so that's what I did. One stormy October night when it was sleeting in Texas, and my husband passed out in the backyard. So I went in the house and I said, "Kids, pull Dad's bag out. We're going to pack him up. We're taking him to treatment." And that's what I did. But what I did was I went to my first Al-Anon meeting in a treatment center. And if we are fortunate, we are carrying the message of Al-Anon to the family members that have been affected by someone that is there. And they need us. They need to know where we are. They need to be able to be reassured that they're okay. And that's where my first meeting was. And I was very grateful for that, because the meeting was being conducted by a woman that was in my home group that I have today. My home group is celebrating in March, I think it's 54 years that they've been a home group. I don't I feel very responsible for that home group because it's given me everything I have. I have a life today that I never thought was even possible. I thought I was happy where I was, and I was happy where I was. But what I didn't know and what I know now is that I needed you, because my journey was not going to have a happy ending. I had a life with my husband that everybody wanted, and I thought that's all I needed, because we were young. We had been together since we were very young. We had moved away from home. And I mean, we were gone from this area for 8 years. He was in the service. He went to college. We didn't have any children. We were very connected, and we learned while we were gone to be friends. And that was a learning experience, to be able to grow up away from your parents' house. Because really, I was very young. I was 99 days when I got married. I have never encouraged any of my children to get married that young. I didn't like you when I got here. I was very concerned about you. You laughed in very inappropriate places. You were very happy to see each other, and you were always hugging each other all the time and trying to do stuff like, let me give you my phone number. Why don't you call me? And I was very disturbed by all that. I mean, what I knew is that, see, I'm one of five kids. I don't need any friends. You know what I mean? I had plenty, lots of family. I thought I had plenty of good friends. I didn't want you. I didn't know what you had. And then eventually I knew I wanted what you had, but I didn't know how to do it. So for a long time, I sat at the chair right by the door. So when the door opened and the meeting was on over, I bolted out the door and ran in the parking lot, and even had this little short lady that would even run after me and say, keep coming back. You know, we really want you to. And it was just very disturbing to me. And I'm a very huggy, touchy, feeling, you know, I grew up like that. I don't really know. I didn't know at the time that service responsibilities were, that's what it was. What I was explained to and what I know today is that not only the home group that I came from, but also the district that I grew up in was very service oriented. My home group, when I first started there, has two past delegates. And to me, the word delegate didn't mean anything. Even if you told me that's what you were, I wouldn't know what it was. And after a while, I realized that it was refreshing to know that that's the position she had held. It's just that if we're all equals, then it doesn't matter what you've been or what position you've held. It's just that you're willing to accept the time that's going to be your own. I know that I've had people argue with me, but I believe I'm not special. I just think it's my turn. And I heard from the beginning that it was very important for me to be willing to give away in order for me to keep it. I also come to the realization that my most important commodity was my time. I came into the program, I had small children, I had a full-time job, and I had this loved one that I cared more than life itself. And he wasn't acting right, and I didn't know how to handle him or what I could do about him. But, you know, what they did for me was encourage me to keep coming back. Now, it was really weird for me to hear you say, there's no dues for membership, and that we're all individuals, and that God's the only one in charge, and that leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Now, I came from a corporate world. You don't tell me nobody's in charge. So I was very concerned about you. You know, when you kept talking about this worldwide fellowship, and I'm thinking, good grief, you got a worldwide fellowship and nobody's in charge. How in the world is this place as old as it is? But what I know today is that as long as I was willing, I had to have the willingness. I came in the program with a commitment because I found a way to recognize the fact that I couldn't help him. But I was sick and tired of feeling the way I did, and you had the answer. And that after a while and getting comfortable with you, I was willing to sit in there and do whatever you told me to do. One of the first thing I heard you say was get in the car, and I didn't want to get home. So it was very inviting. And so that's what I did. And we went to meetings and we went to anniversaries and we went to conferences and we went. After the second year of being responsible, really, for a position in my home group, because we don't call them, I don't remember, but I know we're trusted servants. We've always included members to be trusted servants, and it's only 6 months. Anybody can do 6 months, right? After my second year, the district was hosting assembly. All right, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna find who's in charge. And so we went. Now, I live in Dallas, and our assembly is in Abilene. So when you get in the car, you have 4 hours from the time you leave Mesquite to where you can be in Abilene. And I didn't realize, one more time, I was in another meeting. All these people that I didn't know very well, but that I was willing to travel with them. And I was intrigued. I was intrigued by the idea that these people were volunteers. And I saw people that I knew, these people that were in my home group that I didn't realize that they had these positions. I didn't know what they were. I just knew that I wanted to be with you. Number one, because I didn't have to be at home. And number two was because you were happy and you were content and you could sit still and you didn't have to run your mouth all the time, that you were teaching me all the time to listen instead of talk and to be willing to be a part of something. And it was very refreshing and very encouraging to know that I could be a part of that, because you told me that you can be a part of this. The better I got, the worse my family or my loved one got. And here's the truth. What happened after 6 years, my husband died of a very horrific alcoholic death. That's what they do. If they don't find recovery, they either gonna find, there's three ways out, a spiritual life or some horrific alcoholic death. And that's just what happened. We had been married 35 years, had 3 children, had a lifetime together. And I knew that my life was not over just because his was. I didn't want it to. During the same year that he died, it was time for us to vote for GR. And I had someone encourage me to stand. I know that was kind of taking advantage of the fact that I really wasn't in a very good place. But the idea that I did stand and I became GR for our home group. And then within the same few weeks, I had a good friend who said, let's go to Fort Worth and have lunch with friends. And actually what I did is when I left Fort Worth to go home, I was also a member of a board for a women's conference that means a lot to me. So I had 2 consecutive 3-year commitments that went on the first 3 years after my husband's death. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. When I say that service saved my life, I'm not lying about that. What I can tell you about the service that I was willing to accept is the fact that I knew I didn't have to do it alone. And that I was told that over and over again, my entire recovery is that I'm not alone. And that there is things that are going on with me that I can share. That first time that I was in assembly and sitting in that business meeting and looking at those people, my idea is, woohoo, you go, girl. You take care of all that stuff. I'm going to sit back here on the back row and enjoy myself. And that's what I did for a long time. As soon as I could get there, I always went. I wasn't necessarily a part of, I wasn't a GR. I just went because I thought it was fun, because I got to be around the fellowship and around people that I thought were so incredibly intelligent, and how do they remember all that stuff? But what I know is that, and when I kept coming back and I kept getting encouragement and I kept hearing from people that loved me so much saying, you can do this. I know you can, Chris, you can do this. And it's a privilege and an honor to do this. And that it's not your responsibility. It's the fact that Al-Anon is my passion. And in order for Al-Anon to stick around, somebody's going to have to stand up. It doesn't work on its own. And what I've also learned is that you can't break it, because it's not yours anyway. It's ours. I am not a spokesman for Al-Anon. I am a spokesman for someone who has found recovery there. And I keep coming back. And so I was on a trip after I was GR, and I knew it was time for us to do elections again in a district. And me and my mouth, which I have a mouth problem, I said, okay, if you want me to, nobody volunteers, I'll stand for DR. So there you go. That's how my recovery in service has been, is saying, oh yeah, okay, I'll go along. And the same thing happened after 3 years. In my district, there's three past delegates that are there. I don't know how that happened. I just know that that's what my exposure is. And one of the delegates was very close to me, and he said, you can do this. And that was not something I wanted to do. And then the same thing happened after I was the delegate. I had somebody. After a while, what I know is that it was encouraging to know that I could become a part of the Worldwide Fellowship. It was important for me to know that, and it was great. Being chair was not something I ever wanted to do. It was way too involved. I heard people say, not only, Darlene, are you chair, you're responsible for all this, but including and up to the air conditioning in the room. And I was just not about that at all. But I know for a fact that the recovery that I have found, the encouragement that I've gotten from the membership about you can do this, the self-esteem and the awareness that I'm smarter than I thought I was, the encouraging membership that has helped me and in so many ways, you know, I don't even know how to begin to encourage people other than you don't have to be here. You get to be here. This is not something that's a necessity. It's a gift. You know, and being able to take care of me and be a part of what I'm responsible for. I'm responsible for no one, really. I'm obviously solo now. I don't have children. I have grown people. I still have a full-time job until my employer dies or decides to quit. You know, there is, as far as being responsible to my home group, oh my gosh. I love my home group. They were there for me when I walked in. Honestly, what I know about that is that I will always keep going back there. You know, I still live in Mesquite. I grew up here. I'm from here. I am very, very grateful that Al-Anon's the Worldwide Fellowship today, because I have friends and family everywhere. I have family of choice. And I really, really, really appreciate the invitation, and thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the warning, but thanks for Arizona.
Thank you so much, Chris. Now I'm going to turn over our moderator, Maureen, to use the rest of the time to get your questions answered.
I'm going to start with Ricky, did you feel you were part of your group right off? And if not, what helped make that happen for you?
Absolutely, yes. The first meeting I walked into, the topic was control. And it was just something about that as a topic that was so me. Remember I said I was the only one that could get anything done, so I had to control everything. And again, like Bonnie, the old timers, the sweet little white-haired ladies, as I call them, and of course I'm one now, they just, you know, here was this crazy, crazy lady. To show you how crazy I was, and they accepted me anyway, I was getting a divorce. We had just gotten a bunch of firewood that had to be split, and my husband was living in a motel someplace, but he wanted half the firewood. And I remember saying, I'm going to give him half the firewood, one stick at a time, bend over. And, you know, but they still accepted me with all of that anger, all of that rage that I had in me. I mean, I had 40 years of rage that I had never expressed when I walked into that meeting. And they had a thing there where they took a newcomer sometimes, and they did take me outside for the first few minutes while they were doing the readings and the business. And you know, one or two of the old timers went out in the hall with me, and immediately, even though they physically didn't touch me, I felt their arms around me, holding me up, you know, loving me, even though I didn't love myself. They were there. And yes, I absolutely felt like this is where I need to be. This is where I want to be right from the start. Thanks for that question. To remind me of that feeling, it was such a good feeling.
The next question is for Bonnie. What was the most significant thing you learned about yourself while you were sponsoring the Alateen group?
Significant, gosh, this is going to be a little bit hard for me because there was so many things. You know, one of the things I didn't share was that back in the 60s, I had to give a child up for adoption. It was before anything came into helping people like me. I was desperate in whatever you want to call it. And I never had children since that point. And yet, it doesn't take a rocket science to know why I sponsored Alateen and have tons of kids in my life, certainly ones that I still know to this day. And so the significant point is that I learned how to value myself and my experience. I was not educated. I barely made it through high school. And I was a worker. I mean, I always had jobs, you know, very small little place to live until I, you know, went traveling on the road with this rock and roll band, you know, for 5 years. But I think the thing is self-worth comes in small doses in every hug, every way that I've taken a risk of putting myself out. Even today, it's hard for me because I've had minority views just about on everything in Al-Anon. And standing up at this World Service Conference, I remember one time, well, the first time that Lois was speaking on the issue, and then they had a vote by hand, by the way. And how do you raise your hand against Lois? Okay. It was very hard for me, but through the years I've gotten a little braver. And you know, even now when I have a mind, and I've done it at the World Service Conference, and I'm not going to go into what they are, it doesn't really matter at this particular point, but standing up and taking a stand in Al-Anon and voicing a minority, I will do it because other people cannot. I might be shaking, I might be nervous. You know, the older I'm getting now, the last 2 years, I'm getting the hip operation and a lot of things are happening to me. My body's breaking down because of all the dancing. By the way, I just missed the disco dance in London fellowship because I'm on here, right? Okay, just to let you know. There's something my mother brought me up to say or to believe in. The things I do today now are the memories I live off of tomorrow. And with all the Alateen sponsoring I have done, and I've done it in every single country I've lived, for 8 years, I have learned that people are wonderful no matter where. That's wonderful people. And my husband's just touched me now, so I'll quit right there.
Thank you, Bonnie. That's a great answer. The next question is for all three of the speakers. How do you separate service from attitude? The attitude of I need this, I can fix this group, and I can make it better. Ricky, could you answer that question, please?
Yes, that's such a good question for me because, like I said already, I was the only one that got anything done, and I was the only one that knew the right way to do it. I think it was my first assembly when I became DR. There was all the outgoing GRs and DRs and all the incoming GRs and DRs. We had about 300 meetings in the state. So figure it could have been 500-600 people. And people got up and shared. And with each person sharing on whatever the issue was, I could pick up a little piece of something that was not what I had been thinking, but that sounds pretty good. And to be able to start to listen to what other people were saying and to realize that there's not only one right way. Sometimes there's two or three right ways to get something done. Was such a revelation. Growing up, when I was in the school, you know, I had to do what they wanted. When I was living with my father, I had to do what he wanted. So here, to hear people voice different opinions was just something so anathema to me that, and so refreshing that it was like, oh, that's a good idea. I like that idea. You know, so it just changed how I dealt with things. I still occasionally think, you know, when I had my own company for many years, so of course I was there, I was the boss. So of course I was right. But even there, I learned sometimes to listen to employees to see if they had an idea that might do the job better. So that, I don't know, I think it was really that assembly that just changed my mind. 500-600 people in pure chaos and somehow or other coming together to have one opinion and everybody agreeing to do it. Thanks. Great.
Thanks, Ricky. Bonnie, can you answer that one?
Would you please repeat the question?
Sure, I was just gonna do that. How do you separate service from the attitude of I need to do this because I can fix this group and I can make it better?
That's a slippery slope. First of all, I've moved 8 times since I've been in the program. 3 different countries. Florida is 4th if you really want to talk about that one too. Okay, and each group that I went to, certainly my first group, I knew I had the enthusiasm and all the things to be a part of that group and make the group. Certainly I would like to think that I was part of the group that it grew so much, you know, after a year or two. It'd be nice to think that I basically did what I did and served the way I served. And that was it. I don't believe it's hard when you move to each group, each district, each country, because everybody has different policies. And when I worked in, when I was volunteering at London GSO, my sponsor, she was my sponsor and the person that guided me, she was secretary at GSO. She's long gone. Both of my sponsors there are long gone now. You know, she would say, well, darling, you don't even know how to make a proper cup of tea. I'm just like, okay. But what she was telling me was that there were differences of policy and differences. And I really had to respect that. You know, when we talk about group conscience, we're talking about group conscience and each place that I've been. So to me, Florida, when I was in South Florida, it was strong and wonderful. And not saying it's not here too, but there's different styles and different directions. So I choose to sponsor people. I do not need to change anything. I think that's very healthy. I know how to get a committee going for things. I know how to do a community. I've done that in every place I've ever been. Paris is really hard because we had this French groups. There were only 26 at that time, French groups, but the English groups I was very involved with and I loved it. And I was able to make some changes or help or do whatever the heck I was doing. I don't know, this word change another group or change attitudes or whatever is uncomfortable because I can't change the world, but I can write letters. I can make a phone call. I can get receipt calls. When I get into this thing of wanting to do that, what you just said, I do the things that I love doing. My sister has Alzheimer's. The only thing I can do for her is to send a card with photographs in it. That's what I do. And I listen to her for 2 minutes on the phone. That's what I can do. So it treats it in a way of saying, I know what I can do within my world, in my group, and that's about it. So I guess I feel a little uncomfortable with the question, but that's okay. I need to sit on it for a while, I guess. George will hear about it later. Bye.
The next question is for Bonnie. Could you please elaborate on the statement you made about belonging means taking risks?
Sure. Okay. In the old days, in order for me to think I was being belonging, I was constantly lying. I wasn't the person that I was. They didn't like me anyway. They didn't. And so, you know, taking my steps, you know, certainly the 4th and 5th step, know thyself. I put myself out there. I'm very, very good at that. I know if a new person comes in, even on Zoom, that I can extend myself. When I was young, how I wished I could have had more friends and things like that, and much more educated than I am and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, taking a risk means I'm feeling more confident in being able to take my risk, but I'm having problems still doing it because there's some things that you might not like to hear, and I don't need to say them at this particular time. So I'm very careful in who I'm sharing with, especially in this crazy world right now. belonging means me doing my part, and I'll do my part without expectation. I'm just a speck on this earth, nothing more. You know, I have my wonderful little crowd and people, and I do what I can. You know, I offer my home. I didn't have a home in the old days. I got a home now that I can offer. You know, I can do a lot of things now that I couldn't before. And I wanted those things for me. So the risk, yeah, it's a risk, but the payment is so much better. It really is. I have to say that.
Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks for that answer.
Maureen, can I answer that also, even though it wasn't addressed to me? Because I never thought of belonging as taking a risk. But for me, it's taking a risk that you might reject me, or that, you know, you might leave and I might miss you. Those are all painful feelings that pre-program I didn't want to feel. And now I allow myself to feel them. So I'm going to add that to my thinking about belonging is taking a risk, because it's exposing myself to all of the feelings involved with being in a group of people, with a group of people. So that's it.
Okay. Thanks, Ricky. I got another question. Was there, and I think this could be for everybody, what was there one particular position, service mm-hmm. position that you held that helped your recovery the most?
Well, it's got to be Alateen Sponsor. I did so many years of that. And to see, and the one thing I really know about this whole thing about being an Alateen Sponsor, first of all, I'm not going to prevent alcoholism to happen in their lives. I mean, I know some of them that have children of their own nowadays. I've been able to be in communication with them still to this day. And in truth, I knew what my worth was in sponsoring Alateen. It was to provide recovery the best that I could, but more importantly, that even having an AA member as co-sponsor or the other Al-Anon sponsors, or Al-Anon people too now, that they get to see recovery. They get to see a person working the program, and many of them don't have that. So for me, I guess that was the most significant. That's the only way I can put it. Being an Alateen sponsor gave me everything. And also the commitment to make amends to my own family. That was a big one. It took me a long time. My mom, the last 15 years of her life, she lived in Florida, and I was able to spend it with her and do living active amends and loving her to death. It was great. So, yes, that's the most significant.
Ricky, do you have a favorite one that
yes,
changed?
Yes, absolutely. And I think I mentioned it briefly. I was always a doer, you know, obviously. Over-responsible. You need something done, ask Ricky to do it. And I, like I said at one point, that I had done just about every position on a convention. And finally, I was convention chair. And I couldn't do anything. I had all those wonderful committee chairmen of all the subcommittees. I had been registration, somebody else was doing that. I'd been hospitality, somebody else was doing that. I never did entertainment, but somebody else was doing that. And it was such a revelation to me to know that I didn't have to do everything. And that was such a turning point in my own personal life that I can trust other people to do their job, you know. Once, if they understand the job properly, you know, if it's outlined appropriately, let them do it. Oh my God, to not micromanage, you know, it's just so many aspects of turning a doer into being a delegator was such a big point for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Ricky. I think we'll take the next couple minutes to hear from Helene, said she would be willing to participate in a couple of minutes about share her recovery on this story.
Hi, everybody. Good to see everybody. I was thinking about the sense of belonging as far as, you know, growing up in an alcoholic family. I didn't even feel like I was part of my family because things were so chaotic and so unpredictable. And I felt like something was wrong. And I thought it was me. I thought there was something wrong with me. So, you know, by the time I got into Al-Anon, I was suspicious of why people were so nice to me at the meetings, why they were so welcoming and why they wanted to know my name or my number or gave me their number or whatever. It just seemed so foreign to me. And, you know, the good news is I just stayed, you know, and felt that every time I was in a meeting, I felt that. But when I was outside of the meeting, I didn't feel that, you know. So even in my own family, right? So there was a time where I stopped working and I went to meetings every day and every night because I wanted that feeling. I wanted to see what was this all about and how do I get to be there? And I didn't know you could just be a member, like just showing up. I thought you had to go through some kind of class or something like that. And what Al-Anon's also given me is, you know, that sense of belonging that I'm comfortable in my own skin today. You know, I don't need stuff outside of me to make me okay. And I know where I end and other people begin. That's huge. You know, that because my dad or my sister or whatever is mad or angry or whatever, that their mood or their state of inebriation has nothing to do with me. So I know where I end and, you know, I can just have more compassion for other people. And then Al-Anon's also give me a purpose. You know, somebody was there at my first meeting to open that basement church door and to put those chairs in a circle and to put out that literature. And so I feel like I need to be there too. I want Al-Anon to be there for my kids and my grandkids. And it's 70 years old. You know, it was well established way before I started, but I feel, I guess, my purpose, you know, to keep it going too for other generations and other people because it's a good place to be. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Helene, for your share. Becky, you said you'd like to share on the subject.
Yes. I'd like to share on the subject of service. Like the speakers, I have served in many different positions at many different levels of this program. And I would like to point out that, yes, I learned a lot from these positions, but I learned just as much from serving by making the coffee and setting up the chairs and putting out the literature and putting it all away. Those items of service that are not positions are just as valuable and just as important as any position that I ever took. I ask my sponsees fairly early on to chair a meeting because I ask them to chair simply by saying, I'm having a problem with XYZ topic. And you don't have to say any more. The rest of us will be more than happy to tell you how we handle XYZ. And it gets you... It got me out of that fear of putting myself forward, that insecurity of, you know, because I didn't have any value, self-value when I came in these rooms. So I wanted everybody to know that those things that we do are just as valuable to me as an individual and to the group as a whole as any position I ever took. And to answer the question of which position was the most valuable to me, they all built on the one that went before. I learned something more about myself, more about how to handle life with every position I took or everything that I ever did for the group. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. And thanks for all the sharing, everybody, and the questions you sent. They are all great shares. And now I think it's time to turn it over to back over to our chairperson, Floam.
Thanks, Maureen. And oh, thank all of the rest of the speakers. Holy cow, what a great bunch of people that we've had speaking. Ricky, Bonnie, and Chris, sorry about your internet connection. We would have loved to have heard some questions answered at the end there. So we're going to close this thing with the Al-Anon Declaration. So let it begin with me.
Anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help.
Al-Anon, Nality,
Al-Anon,
let it begin with me.
Let it begin with me.